You're listening to the Canadian Country Music Podcast. Here's your host, Tim Albertson.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Season 1, Episode 2 of the Canadian Country Music Podcast, the podcast that takes you behind the stage with current and past artists and industry members, as well as the latest news and releases. I am your host, Tim Albertson, a country music artist and fan that has been infatuated with country music since I was a child. So I decided to start a podcast because as a young artist in this industry, I need to learn as much as possible in this industry. And I know that there are so many more out there that need to as well. So I'm hoping that with this podcast, we can all learn together. But first and foremost, I am super excited for this week. We have a sponsor. Listen, if you're like me, you've been locked away inside your house for a year and your taste buds have been stuck on blend, making the same food with the same blends of herbs and spices and sauces. That was until I heard about this company and everything changed. Hooligan Fuel Hot Sauce and my good friends Kevin and Kim are on fire, pun intended. This hot sauce company was formed when both of them were found without work during the COVID pandemic. Kev took his Croatian roots and created his first flavor, Creeping Heat. And Kim started getting more creative and created Limey Bastard, which I love on my pizza. Or Life's a Peach, which I have on hand for every single cheese board I make. And then they just announced that they have a new coffee-infused hot sauce available May 1st. What's better? They deliver all across the country. Find them today on Facebook at www.facebook.com/hooligan. That's H-O-O-L-I-G-A-N, Fuel Hot Sauce. Tell them our podcast sent you and your taste buds will thank you. On today's podcast, we have the newest releases this week, including Gord Bamford's latest hit and some controversy behind it. We also have the winners from Sunday night's ACM Awards. That's right, I stayed up extra late to record this podcast, so I had the most up-to-date info for you. And also, our interview with the one, the only, Susie Corey. And I am so excited for this podcast, so let's get started. Here comes the news. So we have some new releases this week, and these songs have been added to the Soundcheck Entertainment's shout out Soundcheck Canadian Country Music playlist. So here we go. Crazy by Strumming Stories, Train by Manny Blue, Heaven on Dirt by Gord Bamford, High School, the Diesel Radio Remix by Nice Horse, Jay Diesel, and Jeff Dalziel, Me Without You by Tim and the Glory Boys, If It Makes You Happy, Heather Valley, Flying on Your Own by Jen Grant, Break My Heart by Mariah Stokes, Right Here by Eric Barkley, Haunting Me by George Canyon, and Weatherman by Daniel Ryan. We also have Love Hits You by Dylan Wallace, Gypsy Heart by Melissa Livingstone, and Pieces of You by Drake Jensen. Country music news this week. Gord Bamford released his latest hit, Heaven on Dirt, this Friday, and some people are extremely excited about it, except maybe one group. Doc Walker has commented on Gord's Facebook post with multiple question marks and exclamation points tagging their single, Heaven on Dirt, which released in 2016. Now, the tunes themselves are different lyrical-wise and tempos, but perhaps the same song name just doesn't sit right with the boys in DW. The Country Music Association of Ontario announced their list of performers this week for their award show happening May 30th. Artists set to perform are Tim Hicks, Aaron Allen, Buck 20, David Boyd James, Owen Barney, Renee Ray, Robin Ortolini, Sasha, the Red Hill Valley, and the Western Swing Authority. And lastly, the ACM Awards were on CBS last night, and the winners are as follows. For new female artist, it was Gabby Barrett. New male artist was Jimmy Allen. Video of the year was Worldwide Beautiful by Kane Brown. Music event of the year was I Hope You're Happy Now by Carly Pierce and Lee Bryce. Song of the year was The Bones by Maren Morris. Single of the year was I Hope You're Happy Now by Lee Bryce and Carly Pierce. Album of the year was Chris Stapleton's. Group of the year was Old Dominion. Duo of the year was Dan and Shay. Male Artist of the Year was Thomas Rhett. Female Artist of the Year was Maren Morris. And lastly, Entertainer of the Year was Luke Bryan, who accepted his award at home as he has tested positive for COVID this week. So get well soon. Now, if you recorded the awards and I just spoiled everything for you, I'm sorry, but the performances alone are worth the rewatch. Thomas Rhett's What's Your Country Song and Miranda Lambert and Chris Stapleton joined up, which was an absolutely incredible duet. Maren Morris and Ryan Hurd sealing off their performance with some fireworks of their own. It wasn't just the songs, it was the performances. You can tell by the look on the artist's face that they absolutely miss the live stage. New Female Artist of the Year, Gabby Barrett, did an intermittent performance of her smash hit, One of the Good Ones, live from the Bluebird, which is an icon in Nashville, as well as Dan and Shay performing there as well. My boy Luke Combs brought the house down with his single Forever After All. If you know me, you know I absolutely love Luke Combs, and last night again was an absolutely incredible performance. The night was filled with so many amazing performances, and to hear live music again was such a priceless moment. So congratulations to all the winners, nominees, and the Academy for an absolutely spectacular night. And that's this week's news headlines. Now, today's interview is the much-anticipated Susie Corey. This country rock singer from Toronto, Ontario, is on a mission in 2021. Having grown up in Beirut and moving here at the age of 8 months old, traveling the world was always a passion of hers, and she found herself moving to Jordan for 13 years, becoming an airline manager and living the high life, right up until COVID hit and she found herself without a job. Now, Susie was always passionate about her music, and while some musicians took a break from music during COVID, Susie hit the ground running. I first heard Susie when I was working on my single, Looking for a Road. I was searching for other avenues to promote my single and had heard of the Canadian Indie Country Countdown with Walter Scott James. While my single was climbing the charts, this other song, Love Revolution, was also right beside me. Susie Corey's single and my single, nearly 10 weeks in a row, were always right beside each other. It was stuck in my head, and I found myself humming it more often than not. I began to follow Susie, and she was blowing up everywhere. I created a group on Facebook called Thunder Bay's Live Music Show, and Susie agreed to be one of the first members to perform on the group. And from there, a friendship quickly began. I honestly couldn't think of anyone better to start this podcast off with than Susie. She's exactly the image of hard work, determination, and perseverance. Female country music has been on a major rise of late, and Susie is showing that there is yet another incredible female to add to that conversation. So sit back, grab a drink, and enjoy our conversation with the one, the only, Susie Corey. All right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. Susie Corey, thank you so much for coming on today as my very first guest.
I'm so honored. How are you, Big T?
I am doing amazing. Susie, you have been killing it this year. 2020, for most musicians, has been kind of a standstill, but you seem to have taken the fire and just ran with it. Everywhere I look on my social media, Susie Corey's name pops up everywhere, from whether you're working on a festival or you're doing new music or you're heading to a different town or you're playing this show or you're setting up with this person. It just seems like you are on fire lately. So thank you so much for taking a little bit of your time. I'd imagine you have a very busy schedule, but thank you so much for coming on to this podcast today.
Well, I think just looking at social media, it looks like a busier schedule than it really is.
True that, eh? But
yeah, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that I really have to thank 2020 for. One thing that, you know, you and I had discussed, I was working in the airlines. I've been doing that for several years. And so about 3-4 years ago when I started doing music, that's when I, you know, first began songwriting and everything else and recording. I was still working at the airlines and doing both full time. And thanks to 2020 and everything that happened, I was let go from my job. And it was the best thing that ever happened. Because, you know, literally then I had 100% of my time to give to music. And that's when, you know, what you're saying now that you're just seeing me all over the place. It's because when you start to focus and put all your energy into this one thing, that's when really incredible things start to happen.
That's awesome. So we're going back into your background before music. Now, I just recently found out that you are actually not born and raised in Canada. You guys moved here from somewhere. So I wanted to go into that. And then let's kind of get into like your roots, where you came. I know you're a 70s girl. I've seen that all over the place. I can't wait to talk about that. I wasn't alive in the 70s. So I can't wait to hear about the history of it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about your background a little bit. So you came from a place called Beirut, mm-hmm. and then you guys made the move when you were 8 years old to come to Toronto.
8 months old.
8 months. Yes. Not 8 years. Yes. 8 months old.
Yeah. So I didn't see much of the Middle East. I still think it's funny right now when I think about it, Middle Eastern cowgirl, whoever thought, you know, I mean, country music.
I'm sure that's a selling point somewhere.
I know. I'm just, how like unique is that, you know, when you're supposed to have a story. But yeah, I was born in Beirut and, you know, my parents moved here when I was 8 months old. There was a big war going on over there. And so I grew up in Toronto, but I ended up moving back myself and spent 13 years in the Middle East in Jordan. And, you know, that was so interesting for me. I'm just someone who loves to travel. That's why I got into the travel industry. Because I knew I wanted to be a musical artist even when I was like a teenager. You know, I always talk about how my first concert was Guns N' Roses. That changed everything. It made me realize that's what I wanted to do. And go home and tell your parents you want to be Axl Rhodes. And
yeah, good luck. See them laugh you right out the door.
Right. They said there's no way you're going to be doing that. So my second passion was always travel and flight. And I actually want to fly planes. Didn't do that either. But I ended up working in the airlines. And that took me to the Middle East. I ended up, you know, working my way up the corporate ladder, and I became a manager for British Airways in the Middle East. And, you know, that was a big thing and great experience. And I think it all, it's funny because it's come back full circle to help me now with what I'm doing. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, who's your team? And I'm like, no one. Myself and I. And I'm okay with that because I can self-manage and I have no issues reaching out to people and connecting with people. And, you know, that's the largest part of the music industry besides creating the music is working the business side of it. You've got to be fearless and be able to reach out to anybody. And it's all about networking.
Yeah. And the fact that you're doing this all by yourself is actually like monumental. I don't think fans actually know the amount of work that goes into getting onto radio and playlists and getting these interviews and whatnot. Like, me being a fan of you, I reached out to you because I absolutely love you. But for other podcasts, you have to go through a process and whatnot. So just the fact that you've been able to do it all by yourself is absolutely ridiculous. So before country music, you weren't 100% a country girl. You grew up in the 70s and you grew up with Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses. So what made you decide to change genre per se towards the country aspect?
Well, it kind of happened organically. And, you know, we were talking about my producer, Brent Wood. So the first producer I worked with here in Toronto in 2017, we began recording, John Angus McDonald from The Trues produced four songs. They were rock songs. And, you know, I'm proud of those songs. We did a great job on them. The thing is, after I finished those, I had been introduced to Brent Woods down in Los Angeles through a mutual friend, not to work with. We just became friends, you know.
Oh, nice.
But over the course of a few months, I realized the more I got to know him that that's someone I want to work with. I knew that he was producing other people. Mm-hmm. He's worked with Kiss. He was, you know, a guitarist with Vince Neil for 10 years off and on. And he was the current guitarist with Sebastian Bach from Skid Row, one of my favorite bands.
All right. So he's got a couple of small artists underneath his belt, I'd say.
Yeah. And you know, I went, okay, this is my guy to produce like the rock album. And so I connected with him and said, you know, would you want to work together? And he agreed to that. So I was more than happy to go down to Los Angeles. But he insisted that we spend a couple of weeks before we do anything, just finding my genuine sound. You know, who am I? Yeah. Because the stuff I did with John Angus, you know, I will even admittedly say I was trying to be a certain persona and imitating, you know, the artists that I enjoyed, like yep. Axl and so on. And I remember Brent saying to me, listen, you are not Axl Rose. So stop saying I in yourself. First of all, I said, okay. And then you know, he said he would give me a lot of advice and then say, okay, go take a few days mm-hmm. by yourself and write. And I did. And that's when I came back to him and, you know, he was looking at the songs and going, this is not rock. This is country.
Wait a minute.
And, yeah. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Country. I don't listen to country music. You know, this is, and he's like, you know, and then he'd play with it on his guitar. And, you know, because at the time I don't really play an instrument well enough. I can do basic chords, but he would play along to whatever I recorded vocally mm-hmm. and written. And I started to see he was right. Absolutely. And now thinking about it, you know, I grew up with country, not because I was listening to it, but my mom was yep. always listening to country. And mm-hmm. it's so crazy how you don't even realize how that affects you. And, you know, but now it all made sense to me. And it just felt so right that when Brent and I had that conversation, I'm like, you're right. And to me, it just seems like the right genre because, I mean, I'm a rocker. I love rock mm-hmm. music, but I'm not like some badass, you know, foul mouth person. And when I first did the songs with John Angus and I went out, I played the Whiskey A Go-Go in LA. I played tons of bars here around Toronto and I loved it, but I felt like the environment was, you know, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I'm not a party animal. I'm yeah. not, so it was hard to kind of put on some kind of persona that doesn't represent who you are. And not to say that country fans don't drink and do all that. You know, but it's just, it's crazy. It's more of a family environment yeah. somehow, you know, and I think I fit in better there. And then I found my happy medium with country rock. So, you know, Brent and I do rockers too. I've got a couple of songs and there's some stuff coming out that's really, it's more rock than country, but it always has that country edge to it, you know.
It's always got that feel to it. It's always got that storytelling with it. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I found my little niche of where, you know, I've combined the rocker with the country girl.
Yeah. Even for me, when I was doing like when I was in high school and stuff, and we did all the bands that I was in, we always the way that I always described ourselves is if somebody was like, oh man, what kind of music do we play? We're like, we're something you'd expect to listen to on Much Music.
Right.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay. Cause like Much Music had that wide range, didn't have any country, but it had a wide range of stuff. And that's kind of where we were at the time. But when I was trying to sing it, I would picture in my head, somebody else singing that song, somebody that I admired, and I would sing it the way they did. And by the third song, I wouldn't have a voice anymore because that wasn't me whatsoever. And I didn't train myself to do anything like that. I can't scream. I can't really growl all that much. So it didn't really work out for me. And even so, when we were doing it and we'd record and I'd go in there with my actual voice, yeah. the recording producer would sit there and he's like, what is this? It sounds great, but it doesn't fit what we're doing right now. You got to get that twang out. Yeah. And I was like, oh, fair enough. So that's like, it started getting the wheels in my head that, okay, maybe country is where I just belong.
Right.
It just seems yeah. natural for me and everything. So maybe that's just where I needed to find my niche and continue with it. Plus my grandmother kept telling stories when she was a younger kid and sang stories. So like the songwriting aspect and the storytelling thing still kind of worked for me as well.
That's so cool. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the thing is, I really believe that you don't have to be an expert in music. People who listen to your music, they can tell someone is being genuine or not. It's mm-hmm. just it's so obvious, you know? And so the more true you are to who you are, people will sense that.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's why it's really important to not be affected by outside sources or even in real making the realization for me, it was a realization that the music I listened to isn't necessarily what I should be singing, mm-hmm. you know? So although I was listening to the Metallicas and, you know, if you see my social media, I have like a rock shirt on every day, except today. but yeah. And, you know, what you listen to again is not necessarily what you need to be performing. Mm-hmm. You need to be true to who you are in terms of what you're trying to say and what's the message you're putting out there. So
yeah, 100%. You could take aspects of what you're listening to and kind of bring it into your stuff, but it doesn't necessarily need to be exactly what you are listening to.
Exactly. Yeah.
So COVID hits. So for me, I had a festival going on. I had just come off my Taibei show. So we did Taibei and Matt Lang. They came through town, so we got to open up for them. And then COVID happened and everything for me just shut down. And for Thunder Bay, like, there was nothing. There wasn't work going on here. There wasn't music going on here. But for you, on the other hand, down in Southern Ontario, it seems like the gear started shifting. So you got your layoff from work. Doors were shut down for that. Nobody was flying anymore. But how did you take what you had accomplished in your workplace as being a manager? Obviously, you have to deal with a bunch of people all the time, most of them not very happy with you. How would you take that aspect of your work and bring it into your music, maybe by like talking with some of the more higher known producers, your producer in LA and whatnot? Did that kind of give you a sense of ease by talking with people because you already had this like professional stature about yourself?
Yeah, I think, you know, I do have to clarify, I wasn't just laid off. I was completely let go.
Just boom.
Yeah, get out.
Out.
But, you know, it was, like I said, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. And I saw it as that. And I think just even in that kind of perspective, it changed everything because I went, okay, now this is all I've got. There's no plan B. You know, I've got to make this work. And that's when I started focusing on, first of all, because I had lots of time and we really couldn't go anywhere and there wasn't a lot of distractions, you know, like trying to set up live shows and everything else. I was like, okay, I'm going to work on my craft. I'm going to write songs. And I started writing more. I picked up the guitar and I still don't play well, but I learned basic chords and I could start to write songs using the guitar, which I'd never done before. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a keyboard as well. And so I started doing that. And then I do Zoom calls with Brent, my producer in LA, and we started working on songs that way. So that was, you know, I was using the time very productively. I did a lot of spiritual work because I think also working on yourself, knowing why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we talk about now mental health and everything else, I saw people go into a spiral because of what was happening, you know? And I think it's so important to stay grounded and to understand that we are all here to make life better on this planet, you know, for others, for ourselves, but we can only do that if we ourselves are in a good place.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure that I'm building for myself a solid foundation where if I'm getting into this industry where we know there's a lot of, you know, uncertainty, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of good people, a lot of not so good people, you've got to stay who you are. Mm-hmm. And I think I have that now because I've had the whole year to work on that and really get focused on it. And, you know, then the other thing was starting to build ideas of what can I do? Okay, so we're told that this is closed down, this is shut down. And when it seemed like the whole world is being told you can't do anything, I'm like, no, there's always something we can do.
Yeah.
And then that's when, you know, I was really lucky, actually, if I'm just going to go back a little bit. In February, I'd flown to LA and I shot 2 music videos, not knowing what was going to happen later. But I ended up shooting these 2 music videos. I had 4 singles lined up to be released that year. So I had them planned, spaced out. So I was lucky because I had all this stuff done even before it hit. That when it hit, I was good. I'm like, I'm golden. I've got stuff to put out. Whatever. But one of the songs, Love Revolution. Yeah, exactly. Love Revolution, when I put that out, you know, that was an important one to me because it spoke to what was going on, even though it was not written about that specifically, about 2020. Mm-hmm. I actually wrote and recorded the song a year before, but it was talking about the world changing and coming back to a simpler time and us realizing what's really important in this life, which is love and loving each other, loving yourself, you know, and when you live a life of love and just caring about people, everything is beautiful. You know, you don't get anxieties and worried about this and worried about that because you know it's all going to work out. And it really is. Yeah. So I put out the song and then I went, okay, what am I going to do now? You know, am I going to shoot another music video? Do so? And I'm like, no, I want to show people what the Love Revolution is. So I'd read about drive-in festivals and I'm thinking, okay, well, there's something we can do. And I'd never been a promoter. I know you have because I listened to your podcast. I never put on a show myself. But I went, I don't care. I'm going to make this happen. I know enough country artists. They all want to be playing right now. let's do this. And once you put it out there, you know, I put on social media that, hey, if I was to do a drive-in festival, would anybody come? All of a sudden there's like 400 responses.
Yes, okay. please.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's how that evolved. And like, it was 3 weeks from start to finish from when I first came up with the idea, found the piece of land to use. And then within 3 weeks, we had the, you know, festival put together, incredible artists on that. We got radio on board with free ticket giveaways, you know, like Pure Country 105, KX96, Global News came and reported live there. I was like, you know, I couldn't have imagined that it was going to grow into something so big, being something that I just came up with, and you're, you know, it's an idea in your head, but
yeah.
It goes to show that when you have the right intentions of why you're doing something, for me, it was not, you know, for myself, it was for getting people to have live music again and getting artists back on stage. And it taught me a lot of lessons about working for the collective, not working just for yourself, you know?
Yeah. See, that's the part where I'm trying to get back into now. Cause like, for me being in Thunder Bay, there is a few country artists in Thunder Bay, but it is very much just kind of dispersed between the crowds. Yeah. So it really does feel like it's 1v1 up here. So when COVID hit for us, I had to expand out, and that's where I found the Southern Ontario, and I found all the live music shows that were going on. And that's where I found you, and I found other people like Aaron, and I found like, oh, just so many, like Walter Scott James. And then I heard about Soundcheck Entertainment and all these other companies and whatnot. And then the ball started getting rolling. And then I realized that my concept from what I had seen in the movies and from long, long ago, where it is, you know, everybody fights to the death. Everybody wants to be number one. And if you're not number one, I'm not helping you, blah, blah, blah. So that kind of concept came into my head when I was younger, and I still had it for a while. But now as I'm getting, I guess I'm not getting older, but I'm now in my 30s. So I'm a very old soul. So like even at the age of 12, I felt like I was 40 at that time. So so for me now, it's getting to the point of, okay, well, I feel confident that what I have done has seemed to help me out. So out there somewhere, there is probably somebody listening that is kind of humming and hawing about the music industry, doesn't know where to start, doesn't know where to get their foot in the door. So now I've seen it more as the collective, where everybody is there to help everybody. You feed off each other. We're all just one big community at the end of it, and one big family. So if we can all help each other, then everybody else wins.
Absolutely. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that what you put out is what you get back.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when people are like, oh, well, this is awful, and this person didn't help with it, well, then you have to look at yourself and how are you viewing things? Because what are you doing, you know, and putting it out there? I can't say really, you know, I don't really recall any bad experiences that I've had, and not to say it's been a perfect, you know, journey all the way through. I think it's your view of things, because everything is going to teach you, right? So even the experiences that didn't turn out so pleasant, you go, okay, well, that showed me what I really don't want. So I'm thankful even for that,
you
know, but in the end, you can't let it affect your own view and your attitude towards what you're doing. You have to stay positive and stay, you know, willing to help people. I've told many artists, and again, you know, you and I talked about this before we started the podcast. I'm not an expert by any means. I've only been in this a couple of years. I mean, I talk to most people, they've been in it for 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
So I feel funny sometimes telling them something, because I'm like, well, they must know, but sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not because a lack of knowledge, it's more, you know, we talked about reaching out to people and so on. Some people just don't have that kind of personality. But I talk about the importance of, you've got to build that personality, because that's something you can work on, you know, and you've got to work on that part of it, because that will make the difference. You know, reaching out to people, not being afraid to ask. I know from, again, listening to your podcast, you are the person that will go and ask. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. You know, you've got to have the talent and, you know, the songs and everything else. I get that. But you also have to have this other side. Nobody's going to do the work for you if you're not doing it first.
Exactly.
No.
Exactly. And the worst thing, like I said on my podcast before, the worst thing they can say is no.
Right. But if you don't ask, well, then it's a definite no.
Yeah. And then you're stuck with the what ifs. Well, man, what if I ever did actually play that show or talk to that person? Like, where would I be right now? Well, yeah, should have asked.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right. So you were talking about how you came out with a couple of videos you had already done. You had four singles on the back burner. Your new single's coming out, and I just want to bring up, I'm going to move my camera here for a quick second because I don't want to mess up this. This is first podcast, Susie. We can't screw this up. So you have a new single, Time, coming out, correct?
That one's already out. That just came out.
So that one's out. This one has a really, really personal story that I want to talk with you. And I kind of want to get into that personal aspect of songwriting because I feel like it desperately needs to be there. And in your songwriting, you need to have a connection with somebody, whether it be this personal story that you have or whether it just be a fun, loving song that somebody can relate to. So can you talk about Time, and then we'll get into a couple more of your other singles that are coming up as well?
Sure. Yeah. And I just want to touch on something before I get into the specific Time. You know, the whole songwriting process, that's something else that I found interesting the more I got into country music and understanding how a lot of people write. There's a lot of co-writes in the country music world. Mm-hmm. And I don't know so much for you because, like you said, you're kind of out in another area.
I'm all the way out in right field, but I do have a couple of songwriting ones that I am currently working with or have worked with in the past. But as I said in my podcast, every single time I seem to write something over the last little bit, it instantly is set in my mind as that's not going to be good enough. And then I just grab that piece of paper and I chuck it and I'm on to the next thing and I don't even keep it. So I'm getting a little bit better at that, but.
Yeah, you got to keep it because you never know, you know, because it's part of something else. But yeah, from when I started writing, you know, I've always written by myself. And although now I co-write all my songs with Brent, it starts right here. You know, in my home, I sit, I come up with the songs, the ideas, and then I send it to him and then we work through it together. So we do co-write, but he's really the only person I've co-written with. The only other songwriter or performer that I wrote with is Nicole Ray. And she's incredible. Yeah, and so her and I worked on a song, but we laugh now because the song we wrote is about, like, you know, again, a cheater and whatever. And I said, Nicole, I don't think I'm going to use this song because it doesn't fit my kind. I'm all upbeat, positive, whatever. And then she goes, yeah, I don't think I'm going to use it.
Should we try and sell it to somebody? I don't know.
Yeah, anybody wants to talk about a two-timing cheater, you know, we got the song.
I'm sure there's a few women listening right now that are like, I want that song right now.
Great. I hope, well, you know, we're ready to give it. The writing process, I mean, to me, it's always been, or people are like, oh, here, I've got songs. Do you want to listen to this? Maybe record it. And I do politely say, you know, I've been listening to some great stuff. But for me right now, because I'm just starting, it's really important for me to be the writer. And I'm trying to get my message out there of what, you know, I'm going through or what I'm feeling. And so like a song like Time, even though it wasn't something I personally went through, it was a colleague of mine at work. You know, his son tragically passed away in an accident. I have kids of my own. And I just, I thought, you know, everybody thinks about that, but God forbid, the worst thing that as a parent is to lose a child. Because you imagine, you know, that the process of how people pass from this life is, you know, the older you are, but to have a young child who hasn't even fulfilled his life. And so even a situation like that, I mean, obviously there's so many emotions there that the way to think it through and deal with it was through writing a song. And, you know, again, even though it wasn't a personal thing that happened to me, but to be around something like that, and it makes you think about these things and then to express it in a song, I think that's an incredible thing to be able to do. And I think as songwriters and artists, we're so lucky that we have that opportunity to express ourselves and to put things out there. And the more personal it is and the more heartfelt it is and has truth in it, that's really when it touches other people. I mean, I remember performing the song once live before it even went out, and a lady was in the front row and crying. And I'm thinking, oh my God, wow, I've really touched her with the song. Yeah. But I went up to her afterwards and I spoke to her, and she said to me, because I had explained a little bit the story in the background of the song, she had just gone through the same thing with her own son. So I was just like, oh my gosh, you know, it just goes to show you, it's just incredible how That's why it's so important. You know, I'm not putting down anybody who sits and writes songs to get out onto radio and to write something popular. I get it. Everybody needs to have a career and would like to make this a career. But I think the more you can put that aside for a moment when you're writing and just do what you're feeling and let the song come through you. Because I'm a firm believer that even when we write, you know, it's coming from something else. It's an energy in the universe that comes to you. And especially like for my song, Love Revolution, that was the one of the clearest songs that I wasn't going through anything. I will, you know, didn't have an idea in my head. I remember just sitting down at the keyboard because at my piano, because I felt this thing about a change coming and these words were coming to me and I'm like, I don't even know where this is coming from. You know, so it's the weirdest feeling, but that's the most incredible thing is when something flows through you and it comes to you. And the song that you might be mentioning soon, my next single's Got a Feeling. Yep. And that was another one. I was walking in the street and I'm just like, got a feeling, got a good, good feeling, got a, you know, and this line just kept going, got a feeling, got a good, good feeling, got a. And I'm like, yeah, I got a feeling. And then I came home and I recorded it. And then I sent it to my producer. I'm like, this thing is stuck in my head. You know, like I just. And he goes, oh, it's great. I'm like, okay, let's build this, you know, because if it's stuck in my head, it's going to get stuck in a lot of heads.
100%. It's already stuck in mine. I'm going to be humming it all damn day now.
Well, it's a good song to have stuck in your head. It's
going to make you feel it. It is a great, I can't wait for it. So which one is the one that's currently catching up to me on the countdown right now? You released it about 5 weeks ago.
Oh, is it?
It's on the countdown as of 5 weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah. I think it's Time. That's the latest release. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. That song is 100% an amazing track. And I am nervous as heck because anytime Susie Corey brings a release out the same time I bring out a release, my butt gets a little like clenched.
About that, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's so important to be happy for people. And, you know, again, Walter Scott James and what he's doing and Soundcheck Entertainment, all of them, I'm so thankful to them because what they're doing is giving us platforms to get our music heard by people.
Exactly.
But we did talk about the whole thing. My view of putting people ahead of people, like artists, you know, number one or number two or awards and things like that. Again, you know, it's to each person, it represents something different. So I'm only speaking on behalf of myself and in no way am I putting anybody else down for liking those things and seeing the importance of it, you know, furthering their career through it. But my only thing is I will never look at another artist as competition. And I don't want someone to look at me as any kind of competition because we are all creators of music. And I think that is the most important thing is that we're doing something creative and we're all putting incredible things. I've listened to the countdown several times. And I told Walter Scott James, the level of creativity and the music on there and the voices and the songwriting is incredible. And you know, that's just here, like the Canadian countdown. And these are independent musicians. And I really mean that, you know, for me, it was an eye opener because like you, even though I live in Southern Ontario, I don't always listen to country radio, but when I listened to this countdown, I was like, look at all these artists we have. That's just, it's incredible. So many great people, you know, and all in one concentrated area here in Ontario.
Right. Like I was so blown away by that as well. The fact that like you start listening to it and all of a sudden it's like, wow, like why is this one not on mainstream? Why is it only sitting here on the countdown? Why did it only move up a couple points? One in particular that has been stuck in my head was Dylan Burke's song. And like it from the first hook of it, it was just like, whoa, like Whiskey Mind, which shout out Dustin, Whiskey Mind is an amazing song. but if you haven't heard it, go check it out. It'll be stuck in your head for the next week. It is absolutely incredible. But that song alone, I was just like, how are you not up against Gord Banford and Brett Kissel and everybody right now? Like that song should be sitting where it is. So the level of quality that's out there now, as well as the quantity is absolutely incredible. When I started music, I had that old fashioned idea of it cost probably about $50,000 to produce a hit song. Anybody can take, I shouldn't say anybody, I'm not downgrading songwriters by any aspect, But if I have a pen and I have a piece of paper and I have an idea, I can write it down on a piece of paper and we can write a song. But to get it mixed and mastered and have all the musicians and all the instruments all together, like, that takes time and money. I don't have a job that makes me thousands of dollars. I don't know the first step in writing grants or anything like that to get money for that kind of stuff. So the way that I perceived it was, if I could find a song, and I knew that there was companies out there, like there's songwriters all over the world that that's all they do is just write the songs. They don't really play them or anything. So they're just looking for work. So I was looking through a company, and I'll pitch it. It's rocketsongs.com. They are a company that I really have enjoyed working with. They have award-winning producers and songwriters on there, like Looking for a Road. My last single, Before a Bar Like This, that was written by Chris Farron of Ferroni Music, who co-wrote Jesus Take the Wheel.
Wow.
Yeah. So I saw that and I was like, well, obviously. Why is the song still even available right now? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I got the Nashville quality without having to go to Nashville. All I had to do was jump into a studio in town, Blueprint Studio, to record my vocals. And then we mastered it with John Tromblom of Mastering Inc. in Toronto. And from there, I had that quality track. So it was somewhere where I could go where I wasn't spending thousands of dollars for the track. I was spending like $500 for the track when it was all said and done. But I still had that quality to come out with. For you, you have an incredible connection in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the thing is, Tim, I think, again, everybody has to do what's right for their situation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you talk about finances and things like that, I mean, when I was getting into it, I had a job, you know, at the airlines. But again, I wasn't making tons and tons of money, you know, where I'm like, because I have two children as well, and I have expenses of life and whatever.
Same here.
Yeah. But I said, I'm going to do this. This is important to me because I've held off for so many years of not following my dream of doing this, that it was so important to me that I was like, I told you that I go by my gut instinct, and I felt like this is the person I want to work with, and whatever it's going to cost, I'm going to do it. And I know the money will come. And as crazy as that sounds, I know a lot of people will be like, what do you mean? You know, how can I just take that risk? When you do the right thing and it's a part of your path, trust me, it works out. Because there was times I was like, oh my God, like I've got to now pay for this and pay for that. And you know, and the trips down to LA, I mean, I go record my vocals there and we sit right together too, because we, you know, rearrange some parts and whatever. I have to be there. And it's all worked out. And, you know, I got back tenfold what I expected because I was working with the right person. The musicians that he's brought on board to play on the tracks is crazy. Like these guys, you know, played with the pedal steel players, played with Brooks and Dunn. And, you know, yeah, it's just crazy. You know, Dave Moreno from Puddle of Mud is the drummer on all the tracks. And it's, you know, and then I've gotten to meet these people. And actually Dave Moreno and Matt Fuller from Puddle of Mud are in two of my videos.
Jeez.
If you watch the music, they were my band in the video. Yeah. So, you know, it's just like, you can't pay for that. You can't. And then finding my sound and being directed that way, you know, that's what any fantastic producer will do for you. And so those are kinds of things. I can't put a monetary value on that. But again, if we're going to go back to money, because I know that's important to people, you know, going, well, how am I going to spend this kind of money? Trust me, when it's the right decision and it feels right, you will have the money. And I've mentioned to you that since then, you know, I got one piece of advice that Jake Gold, who managed the Tragically Hip and now manages them again, him and I got to know each other. And he said one thing to me, he said, if you're not making money, it's a hobby. Yeah. And I said, no, it's not my hobby. I work full time doing this, blah, blah, blah. He said, are you making money? And at the time I wasn't. And he said, it's your hobby.
Yeah.
And that stuck in my head. And I said, I'm going to show you. And I started looking at ways of where is the money. And then I found, you know, through royalties and whatever. And even though people complain about royalties, that's something, you know, we can get into a little bit. But sound exchange and getting your songs on satellite radio.
Yeah.
It's huge royalties. You know, mm-hmm. it's covered all my expenses and then some. And so, and I've been able to make money and have a sustainable career because of that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's, you know, and even for performances, you know, you start out wanting to just get out there and have the opportunities to perform. Nothing wrong with that. But you've got to change your own mindset of realizing your worth. And unless you see yourself as worth making this much or for a performance getting that much, people will never tell you, oh, here, you're worth this. Let me give you this much. You know, and it's not about telling people. You've got to change it in your own head and see yourself as someone who is hired for events or whatever mm-hmm. and making money at performing because you put a lot of work and effort into everything you're doing. This is what you should be receiving. Yeah. Once you change that mindset in your own mind, it was crazy how I started to get the opportunities where I was making money for performing and, you know, mm-hmm. getting on things. So it's, mindset is everything.
Yeah. In terms of the cash flow, I got a really big eye-opening experience last year. We were doing Summer in the Parks and it was Thunder Bay Virtual Live. And they had a country night going on where Tennille Arts was the headliner and I was asked to open for him. So a gentleman by the name of Chris Taralico in Thunder Bay, he put out this little teaser of what he planned on doing for his live set because he was going on after me and then Tennille was on after that. And he had posted that he had done these like string lights and everything in his backyard, made it look pretty. So at the time I had only put down like, because we had gone from a live show to a virtual show, I cut the cost of my performance down because I didn't feel like I needed to, I wasn't going to have the live band. We weren't hauling our stuff. We weren't doing the lights anymore. So I guess we'll just cut my costs and I'll just, you know, do it here at my house and we'll be fine with that until Chris showed up with all these lights and stuff. And I'm like, well, me sitting on my couch in my underwear just isn't going to cut this show anymore. So we went out and we booked the Terry Fox Lookout, which is icon in Thunder Bay. It's the Terry Fox has stopped in Thunder Bay. This is where he had stopped. So we made a huge monument in his honor and it outlooks the Sleeping Giant. So you stand up there, you can take a picture with the rock statue of Terry. And in the background is a beautiful Sleeping Giant. So we did a virtual live there, but I didn't realize that by doing that, I now had to book time there. And then, oh man, it's pretty dark right now. So I need to get a light system going. Well, I have to get him booked up. And then how am I going to run power from here to here? And am I going to have a microphone? And then I need a camera here. And then, oh man, it's going to take me like 10 hours to edit all this. So I got a really big mind. By the time it was over, I probably ended up paying out of pocket tenfold over what I was getting for that show because I didn't really put into aspect what my time and what all that equipment was going to be worth. Because in my head, I had honestly thought, okay, well, it's going to be less work because of the less amount of time that we have to do. But it ended up, turns out to be more work because of all the extra stuff you had to do.
Right. And see, those are all things I see people sometimes get resentful at, you know, promoters or whatever. And I'm thinking, but you've got to be in control of that. And once you change your outlook on that, trust me, the circumstances change, you know, where people, because however you see yourself is how people will see you. So if you see yourself as, and I'm not talking about walking around with your nose up in the air and being, you know, but it's just know your worth. That's it. You know, and if you can understand that and know that, and trust me, it took me a while because I was always like, oh, I'm just happy for the opportunity. And I was, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I have to change my mind about, okay, but this is my job, you know, and I need to get paid because I always pay my musicians. Yeah. You know, I've never had somebody do something for free. I don't want them to be doing that. And sometimes, you know, for the online performances, my guitarist will be like, oh, don't worry about that. I'm like, no.
No,
you need to get paid. You're here. You're doing a job. You get paid. Mm-hmm. Whether I'm getting paid or not, doesn't matter, you know. And so because I set that precedent, and that's my belief system, I found that the universe just gives me back as well. So I might not get it, you know, like the show that we did online with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a paid gig for me, but that was important because we're doing it for the food bank. And for me, that is invaluable, you know, when you're doing stuff. So it's not always going to be about money. But I'm saying that, you know, once you have your set of morals and why you're doing things, the universe will give you back in other ways. It will come to you. So, you know, that's all. Just knowing your worth.
Yeah, there's a time and place to get exposure and there's a time and a place to work. And you just have to walk that thin line to try and figure out which one works best for you.
Right, exactly.
For me, our Gord Bamford show and our Aaron Pritchett show and our Tay Bay show, all of those were just all exposures. But because I knew Gord Bamford was selling out the show, and because I knew Aaron Pritchett and Kira Isabella were going to be amazing, and then Tay Bay was coming through town, and he had just come off his Good Ones hit. So I knew that those shows were going to have butts in the seats. Yeah. So, yeah, I will take the cut of cash in order to have the thousands of fans that are standing in front of me right now, because 9 times out of 10, I'm going to come out with at least a few people who didn't know who the heck I was coming into there. So,
right, exactly. You know, and yeah. So absolutely something like that, that's where you go, okay, well, this is a valuable opportunity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, how many people are paying to get on tours where they're actually paying money?
Exactly.
That's a whole other thing, you know?
That is one thing I have to say about Thunder Bay. Because we are in the middle smack dab of Highway 1117, you have to come through Thunder Bay. And because of that, we get some absolutely incredible shows that you would never, ever think of seeing for a population of 130,000 people. And I think maybe I'm sure I'm going to get a message on this from Trevor, one of the guys from the auditorium, but I think our auditorium can host like 3,500 people. Maybe so, like our stadium, I think, is smaller than that. Like, our Fort William Gardens is smaller than our auditorium. So, I'm pretty sure like these concerts that normally come into Thunder Bay are huge for us, but in aspect, there you would never see these anywhere else.
Yeah,
so the fact that all these people get to come through Thunder Bay and they'd rather make money than lose money when they're coming here, that's where I get to jump on the trick pony. So a lot of people have had success in town in country music, but they haven't opened up for the people like I have. So there's that thing there where it's like, okay, well, I feel confident and accomplished in this way. You feel confident and accomplished in this way. Let's see if we can mix those together. We can both feel confident and accomplished in every way.
Right. And it's all about building your resume, and that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You know, so you have leverage. So then when you reach out for something bigger in a different area, you can say, this is who I've opened for, you know, and that's huge. So it's smart.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I mean, I got to meet up and have chit chats with Doc Walker and JoJo Mason and Gord Bamford. Like those are conversations that will keep me going for the rest of my life. And I will never tell anybody what happened to those conversations either. Those are mine. Come on,
not even me, Tim.
It was so good. The memories. All right. So back onto the interview. You, madam, not only did you come out with a song called Love Revolution, but you came out with a festival, and you are thinking extremely outside of the box for this one. Can you let us know what your thoughts on the festival coming up is, and even give a background of the festival more in detail than we have already?
Sure. So I have to kind of touch on a book that I read called Start With Why by Simon Sinek. It's an important thing because really anything you're going to be doing in your life, you have to know why you're doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, what's your purpose in doing it? And so, like I said, this idea of the festival, you know, it wasn't something that was self-serving, even though in the music industry, a lot of times we're almost encouraged to be self-centered. And this whole ego thing with, you know, even when you start to have fans, they're like, oh my God. And, you know, it makes you feel like, wow, I'm really something big and important. I think that's where I was talking about staying grounded, mm-hmm. and understanding that we are all the same, you know. I just happen to be doing this, just like you happen to be doing what you're doing. And that's great. But at the end of the day, what are we doing to make this world better? You know, what are we putting in out into the world that makes things better for other people? And it's not just about myself. So the festival, the idea behind that is to spread love, you know, and I've mentioned so many times, I'm such a hippie. I mean, got peace on my top. People are not going to see that on the podcast, and you'll see my little necklace there. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a little peace sign. Nicole Ray actually gave me this, so aww. I love it.
Nicole, I want you on the podcast too.
You know what? I'll get her on here for sure. I'll give you a whole list after. So, you know, I'm a hippie at heart, and the whole idea of Woodstock and that kind of stuff, you know, and I would say minus the drugs and everything else.
Yeah.
But, you know, but just about peace, love, and music. And that's what I want.
Just free.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'd love to bring back that to the world in some form. And so that's my kind of idea for it. And I thought, well, why just Canada? So I did the first festival here in Cavan near Peterborough. And, you know, it was fantastic. It was one of the most beautiful days of my life. And I know for a lot of people who were there, they felt it. There was just so much love and excitement. And it was all about music and people being together. And, you know, then 2 months later, I did another one down in Tennessee. And again, it was just this crazy idea. And people were like, what? There's like a pandemic happening. You're going to do a festival in Tennessee? I'm like, yeah, I want to do this. Again, it's a voice in my head that tells me. And if I hear that voice, I listen, you know, and sometimes I don't know how I'm going to do it. But once you start thinking about the idea, it's funny how the ideas just come to you that, oh, I know this person. Okay, let me reach out to that person. And even though that initial person might not have been the one to help me, they led me to someone else. And you know, that's how it rolls. But so then that's why I thought, okay, well, if I was able to do it there, let's take it international, you know, and I know, I lived in the Middle East forever. Yeah. I've worked in airlines. I've traveled all over the world and I've connected with a lot of people. So in that sense, why not take it globally? Because the concept behind the festival is all about peace, love, and music. And that's something that everybody can relate to. And I'd love to spread that all over the world.
That's awesome. Yeah, that little voice that tells you the head, I literally see that guy more as a coach than anything else. He seems to be the one that's like, nah, man, you can do it. Like I've never gotten bad advice from that little voice in my head whatsoever. So the fact that Susie Corey is reinventing Woodstock is incredible. And I know for a fact that there is a bunch of people in Thunder Bay that would absolutely love this Love Revolution Festival. So that is going to be quick. Awesome. With you talking about the Middle East quickly, do you notice that you have a drawing from there going back into your roots, or have you mainly stuck towards the Canadian roots in terms of like your fan base?
Well, because I lived in the Middle East for 13 years, I got really connected to people there, of course, too. Mm-hmm. And here's an interesting little tidbit. So I was working in the airlines, but then I heard about this kind of like an American Idol competition thing, but it was on the radio. It wasn't televised.
Okay.
And I went, and you know, I didn't have any musical experience really, but I told you that even since I was a teenager, I wanted to sing. Mm-hmm. And even though I'd never really taken vocal lessons or anything like that, well, they do this competition. I go to the competition and one of the judges happened to be a program director at a radio station. And she said to me, you know what, when this is done, the competition, would you mind coming up to the station? I think you could do some radio work for us, like some commercials and things. I'm like, okay. She goes, you've got that voice for radio. I'm like,
yeah.
Okay, well, I didn't know. So anyway, long story short, that led to I was given my own radio show eventually. And so I hosted a radio show there in the Middle East on weekends.
Oh, wow.
So there I am in the corporate world, managing British Airways station there in Jordan from Monday to Friday. Saturday and Sunday, I was at the radio station. I used to host live events and, you know, again, no radio experience.
Yeah.
I was thrown into it and I found I love people and I love talking and I love stories and interviewing people, kind of like what you're doing. And you know, then I got involved in musical stuff there. So now when I came back here, you know, when I started doing music, when people on Facebook and Instagram and everything started to see, oh my God, she's now, you know, an artist.
Yeah.
Then I got the people following there and they think it's all exciting. I even had my songs playing on the radio stations there, the station that I worked for.
That's so awesome. Yeah. That would be a little bit of an awkward conversation. You call into them and be like, yeah, man, I used to work there and I was here and can you play my music? No. What?
Well, they actually contacted me and said, we'd like to do an interview with you. I was like, wow, that's cool.
Oh, that's even better. That's even better.
You know, to them, it was like, wow, this was one of our hosts here. And now, you know, she's out there really doing it.
That's amazing. Susie, thank you so much for coming onto this podcast. This has been absolutely incredible. Last piece of advice. If you were to sit down with 10-year-old Susie Corey, and you had a real good chit chat with her about the life that you were about to live, what would you tell her?
I tell her that it's going to be so freaking exciting. And what you believe is right. Stick to what your beliefs are, you know, because going through life, you will be affected by so many opinions, so many ideas. So But whatever you believe at that time when you're a child, it's all possible, all of it.
100%. Thank you so much. If you are a brand new Susie Corey fan, where can we find all your social media and music at?
I'm on all the streaming services, but the easiest way to find it all in one place is at my website, www.susiecorey.com. It's SUZIKORY.com.
Wicked. Thank you so much, Susie, for coming on to the show. This has been absolutely amazing. Hopefully everybody got as much information as me. I have a ton of knowledge. I'm going to keep rewatching this over and over again and just soak it in as much as possible. So thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, and take care. Well, there you guys have it. My conversation with the one and only Susie Corey, showing you how hard work can truly pay off. Next week, we have yet another incredible artist on the podcast. This gentleman I met a long time ago, back when I was a teenager and I was still promoting concerts. He was in a band called Aberdeen at the time, and they were going on a promotion that they had just finished being the backing band for Camp Rock 2, the Disney movie that had Demi Lovato and the Jonas Brothers as their stars. This gentleman has also has a group called The Agenda. He is also producing his own music, where he just came out of Humber College. Al Rowe is on the podcast next week. I am super excited. If you guys like what you're hearing, we are also on YouTube as well, where we post all the live interviews the day before the big podcast comes out. And if available, we also get the artists on there for a live Q&A chat. That's right, you get a live Q&A chat while you're watching a taped Q&A. You get two for the price of none. Come check us out on YouTube. Just search the Canadian Country Music Podcast. Also, guys, we are on Facebook as well. Just search up the Canadian Country Music Podcast. Come join up on our group. We post a little bit of our demos that we do. We also give you guys in-depth information on who we're doing, as well as some of the news making headlines this week. Plus, it's just a great way to connect with you guys. So please come check us out on Facebook. Search up the Canadian Country Music Podcast today. Lastly, guys, this is a podcast first and foremost, and you can't have that without our podcast platform, and that is Anchor. So if you go check us out, www.anchor.fm/CCMcast, and you can also check us out on Spotify and live feed as well. We're going to be on more platforms as it goes on, but for now, we've got those ones, and we absolutely love their support. So until next week, guys, take care of each other. I love you. Thank you for tuning in, and I will see you all next week.